I will talk to you about the mating behavior and the courtship behavior of the olive fruit fly. First of all, a little background on this invasive pest. It's originally from the Mediterranean, and it's actually very recently been introduced into California. The first flies were caught in 1998. The amount of damage tolerated depends on what the crop is going to be for. So if it's going to be table olives, the tolerance is very, very low, basically zero. So just a few oviposition scars, like the ones you see here, can cause the loss of the entire crop.
It's between the treated and untreated netting. Again, there was no knockdown or mortality observed in the controls. Deltamethrin and alpha cyclomethrin caused greater knockdown and mortality than permethrin in the cases examined here. In this case, it was a little different than the cup assay, where that not all the flies that were in the chamber actually came into contact with the net. Some of them just rested on the side, didn't make an attempt to feed. So there wasn't 100% contact with the net.
Classification. Those are three.
Learn how long the birds remember and all this. I don't think that's going on at all. I think what we got is a whole set of predators out that are selecting for these color patterns. These are straight out mimicry patterns. You can whether call them Basie, you can call them Eulerian, you can call them mixes as you like, but the paradigm is not the learning paradigm. It's a hardwired one. Now let's look at food plans. That's the thing that John Lill was just talking about. I don't want to go on about it very much because I'm not going to just touch on what's coming out of the inventory. But if we just look at specificity and breadth, this is a generalization, and I have to go family by family because as soon as you lump them together, you get garbage in my way of thinking. These are nymphalidae. I have 111 in the dry forest. We have 111 species of nymphalidae that we've reared a lot of so far. And that's the number of plant families they feed on up there in those lines. The yellow ones are the biggies, the fives, the fours. Well, you can see how many there are. There's seven species of nymphalidae out of 111 who feed on four or five families. One of them is our good old friend, the Morphos. Another one is Archaeopropona. Another one is Lycaria, who eats latex-filled plants. And the bottom four are just eating broad-leafed families of monocots, i.e., they're very specific and they're very specialized. Very different pattern than we get up here. Now we go to another one. These are Saturniids. So I have 40 species of dry forest Saturniids in this place. Look at what's happened to the pattern. All of a sudden, we got a bunch of acting like John Lill's Limacodids. Now, if I did Limacodids, we get the pattern that he got. We can go the other direction, Rhyodenids, for example, Skippers, for example, and the line across there is practically all ones. And in fact, if you go down to genera, it's almost all ones as well. So what happens is, family by family, there's differences, and they range all the way from extremely specialized all the way up to extremely generalized. And what happens to the parasitoids in that system? Well, this is Tachinid flies done the same way, and there are 400. They're obviously not 420 numbers there, but the number system is repeated like that if you just keep going for 420 species, all in one place now. And what you get is a whole lot of ones, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. But you can see the yellow ones in there. There are 16 yellows in there, big chunks where one parasite has got a long list of caterpillars. So now this is, remember, I haven't said a word about barcoding yet, all right? This is taxonomically done the way I've grown up on, right? Morphology and natural history of the host plants and the host caterpillars. Long series, we out of the inventory, we get a long series of good specimens. We got co-authorships, we got a lot of taxonomists working on this stuff. But the weak point in that is there is no escape from the parasitic mutualism between the ecologist and the taxonomist. Me as an ecologist, I would like to take all the taxonomists and aim them at all the things that would help me. They would like to take me and aim me at getting all the material they want, right? So we live in this sort of uneasy, mutualistic, parasitic relationship and have done so for the last 25 years, okay? So how do we democratize that? How do we turn that into a win-win situation that's much more universal? Well, take your blurry photograph that looks like that. And this is where we want to go now, and this is where we are now, but in 2003, we discovered a way to sharpen that image even more, the image that we're looking at there. Because this guy right there had this insane thought that Polyvair had this insane thought that we could take a little snippet of that DNA genome and use it as a tool for telling species apart. And as you know, many of you fell on his head and said, oh, the most stupidest thing in the world, and da-da-da, outrageous, and da-da-da-da-da. And my reaction as an ecologist, which I think some of you know, was to take this box, this is the box of butterflies, and give it to him and say, Paul, can you tell these things apart? That's a horrible, that looks like easy over there. That's a horror, taxonomically, morphologically, okay? And 2 weeks later, he said, oh, he has no problem at all. We can tell them all apart, no problem. Well, it's doing using that little snippet of the CO1 gene, which I won't dwell on here. And that's what a real barcode looks like, just in case none of you have actually seen one. That's a think of that as a 650-letter word. Notice I didn't say a 200-letter word. I didn't say a 300-letter word. I just said a 650-letter word. And the standard that's being pushed right now is 500. I don't like 500s. I like 650s, i.e. a long word, okay, made up of four letters. Now, what happens when you add, as you can see, now it's the same thing you saw earlier, but now there's a barcode sequence over here added on to some of those specimens. Well, I think I won't even spend hardly any time on this. This was the first case that we tried out, if you like, with a Astraptes fulgurator, and which were basically impossible morphologically. My goodness gracious, look at that. Anyway, the whole point was that they eat some ridiculous number of 17 food plant families and 51 species. Actually, that number's gone up now, which is nonsense. So we took legs off anywhere under those. We barcoded them all, and it's sorry again. What happened was, you can't see the list behind this, but what happened was this enormously long list of hosts dissolved into lumps, and each lump matched a barcode very well. And when you looked at the caterpillars, it was a no-brainer that the caterpillars went along with the food plants, and they went along with the adults when you started them out and looked at them carefully. End of story. There were 10 species. Now it's 11. We found another one in the same place. An Astraptes fulgurator in one spot by barcoding them and joining it to morphology and joining it to the food plant, caterpillar morphology, color pattern, and the food plants. The point is, it works. So what we're really talking about is the dream, and I can say to you all, we're all working towards that dream, and I like to say within 5 years, other people say within 10 years, you'll be carrying something in your back pocket that will allow you to do this on the spot. We'll see. Now, the idea, of course, is to take all of this group of people, all of these people here, and collapse them down into this little machine, okay? That's the idea. Get them into your back pocket, all right? So that's the concept. Well, what happens when you do that? This is a sort of quick summary of where we are right now. And to read these numbers, you see it says braconidae, and says morphology breaks up. This is how many of a set of species of braconids that we looked at that were morphologically thought of as one thing broke up into something else, into more things when you barcoded them. And how many over here in this column, over here on this side, is how many cases where there are two morphological entities which are not distinguishable by their barcode. And you can see the groups over here, and you can see what... you can look at those numbers and compare them for yourself. I don't have to read them to you. Out of the total, that thing on the far right over there is the total number of species looked at, morphological species over there, that 295, 712, blah, 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 on the other. Anyway, the point I want to make to you is that when you barcode a thing you're very familiar with, remember, these are animals we've been now working with for years and years and years, you discover a whole bunch of things that you didn't know were there. I'll leave it right at that. So, people say, if I have a good taxonomist, I don't need all that sort of stuff. There is not one living person on the planet who can look at this slide and identify all of those butterflies. Everyone's had a name for at least 50 to 100 years. I repeat, Andy Warren can't do it. Olaf Mielke can't do it. Nobody can do it. All right? I can do every one of them with 100% accuracy for $2.50. Now you say, but they're dingy little black skippers that are really hard to tell apart. And if I did the genitalia, then I could tell. That's right. And what's the cost of doing the genitalia? Much greater than $2.50. But you say, but those are the dingy things. Well, what about the pretty ones? I'll bet you $1,000 there isn't one person on a planet who can identify each one of those butterflies morphologically, looking at them. Not one person. I can do every single one of them with a barcode. The point is not that morphology doesn't work. It's just that Barcoding gives you much more resolution when you add it to your morphology. Or this kind of a problem. Anybody want to tell me what the one in the middle matches? It's real easy when you barcode them. That's obviously, that's two genera of skippers, four species. Now, what happens overall when you take one fauna that you're working on and you split them up this way? Well, right now, down in the lower left down, it says 13% increase in Lepidoptera. That's over this set of things, the families that you see up there on the top, skippers, noctuids, saturniids, finches, and nymphalids. We have a 13% increase in one place where we already know the fauna very, very well. Okay, bird guides, I mean butterfly guides and so on over it. For the parasitoids in that place, there's a 51% increase in species. We effectively, you know, another 50% added to it. The difference between butterflies and parasites is not surprising. Butterflies are big, they wear billboards on their wings, so people are easy to tell them apart, and people have worked on them a lot. Obviously, parasites are small, inconspicuous, and the selection isn't working on them the same way it is on butterflies in terms of visible traits. I'm going to skip over this slide and go to the next one.